Preacher was a good 5 miles from the wagon train when the eastern sky began splitting into color. He stopped at a clear running creek to eat some cold biscuits and salt meat he'd snitched. He ruminated as he chewed. Preacher figured that Bedell and his trashy bunch would be starting to close the distance now, maybe laying no more than a day's ride behind. In 2 or 3 days, the wagons would have reached the Platte and be heading west along its southern banks.
Yeah, that's where they'll hit them.
He finished off his breakfast and took a long drink of water from the creek. Then he went to tighten up the cinch. Hammer pulled his usual stunt and puffed up. If Preacher didn't catch it, when he tried to step into the saddle, Hammer would exhale, loosening the cinch strap, and Preacher would hit the ground. Hammer would then roll his eyes and show his big teeth. Preacher always swore that damn horse was laughing at him.
Caught you that time, didn't I?
The big horse tried to step on Preacher's foot, but the mountain man was too quick for him.
God damn you, horse.
Preacher rode another 6 or 7 miles, then reined up before he topped a fairly high ridge. He picketed Hammer and, taking his spyglass, bellied up to the top of the ridge and began scanning. It didn't take him long to spot the riders. They were riding at a distance-consuming pace, but not a punishing one for their horses. And their horses, Preacher had noticed the other night, were all top-quality mounts. Preacher had never seen so many fine horses in one bunch.
Definitely closing the gap.
Preacher stayed where he was until the band of men were out of sight and thought a few things out in the meantime. As to what Bedell and the men might be up to, he had only the word of Wolford Lewis to go on, but Bedell had proven himself to be up to no good, that was for sure. Preacher was at a loss as to just what he should do to cut the odds down some. Preacher didn't think one man tackling 49 would be real smart, frankly. Then Preacher's eyes narrowed as a thought came to him. That bunch he'd watched through his spyglass had been about 5 or 6 men short. He was sure of it. What had happened? Had the men quit Bedell and turned back? Well, Preacher didn't believe that, not for a second. Their absence could only mean one thing. Bedell had become suspicious and ordered the men to lag behind, keeping a sharp lookout on the party's back trail. Preacher took a slow, careful eyeballing of his surroundings. The land looked peaceful, empty, but this part of the country was very deceptive. A whole bunch of people could be hiding anywhere within 100 yards of his location. His eyes cut to Hammer. The horse's ears were pricked and he was tense.
Oh shit, I done it stupid this time. Them men of Bedell's is out there and working in close to me. Damn.
Preacher whirled at the sound, came up on one knee and fired just as a man topped the ridge. Preacher ran toward Hammer and leaped into the saddle just as a bullet slammed into his back. Hammer leaped into motion. Preacher pulled a pistol and fired nearly point blank into the bearded face of a man who had jumped up out of the tall grass. Another man appeared in front of Preacher. Preacher ran him down. There was not a horse around that could outdistance Hammer and flat out run. Preacher's head exploded into a blinded mass of pain. He threw his arms around Hammer's neck and held on as the world went black. It was nearly dark when Preacher forced his eyes to open. He was flat on his back on the ground, and he was cold. His head hurt something fierce. Slowly, his mind started working, and he recalled the gunfight back on the ridge. He'd been shot more than once. He felt around him. His arms and hands worked. He found a pistol and pulled it to him. He felt his left side holster. That pistol was still in place. He turned his head, and sorrow struck him hard. Hammer was down, lying on his side, his pain-filled eyes open and looking at the man he loved. Preacher could see pink foam coming from the faithful horse's nose and mouth. Hammer had been lung shot.
Oh, no. Oh, sweet Jesus, no.
Summoning his strength, Preacher forced himself to his knees, then to his feet. He swayed for a moment, conscious of a pain in his back and side, but he ignored it. He staggered over to Hammer and looked down at the horse. Hammer was finished. He'd been shot 4 times, but he still managed to carry his master to safety.
Oh. All right, old friend. All right. All right now.
Preacher fell to his knees beside the big faithful horse. The pain took him. Preacher fought it hard, but it was a losing battle. It was full light when Preacher awakened again. He looked overhead and saw Buzzard circling ever closer. He clawed for the rifle in the saddle boot. Preacher fought the swimming pain in his head and rose to his feet. He found his other rifle and reloaded both, then checked his pistols, reloading them full. One Buzzard landed and stared with his evil eyes at Preacher. He stripped saddle and saddlebags from Hammer's stiffened carcass, having to dig under the horse with his big knife to finally get the saddle free. Exhausted, Preacher rested for a time, fighting pain and nausea. He dampened a handkerchief and held it against his aching head, near the back where he figured the ball had clipped him. It seemed to help. He pulled up his buckskin shirt and looked at the hole in his side, close to the outside. He felt around to his back. The ball had entered in his back and exited out the front. Preacher figured if the ball had hit anything vital, he'd have been dead by now. He cleaned the wounds as best he could, and then found some moss and placed it over the holes, tying them in place with pieces of cloth he tore from his only spare shirt. He built a small fire and boiled coffee. Then, ignoring his pain, he worked for hours covering Hammer with rocks. Animals might get his faithful companion in many years, but if they did, they were gonna have to work like hell to do it.
Hammer, I'm sorry. I truly am. You rest easy now, old friend. You carried me many a mile. We rode some trails, we did. And you earned your rest. You ride the skies now, all right. And I promise you I'll avenge you. I swear to God I'll do that.
Preacher turned his face toward the west.
Bedell, you sorry piece of shit. You better catch you a whaler ship to China. Because I'm coming after you, you son of a bitch. And I'll find you. I don't care how long it takes me or how many miles I gotta travel. You are dead, Bedell. And anyone who rides with you is dead. And that is a cold promise, you low-life bastard.
Dragging his saddle, Preacher made it to a creek and rested in the cool shade. For several days he drank often and ate up his meager supplies, managing to catch some fish to supplement his diet. He dug up tubers and ate them, tended to his wounds by making poultices. When he started walking west, he knew he wasn't 100%, but he was strong enough to get going. On the second day after leaving the creek, he found himself looking at 3 Kansas Braves sitting on their horses and staring at him.
I'm White Wolf, also called Preacher.
We know of you.
That's a fine-looking spare horse you got, and I want to trade you for it.
Perhaps we do not wish to trade.
Well, I think you changed your mind. How's the horse called?
We just caught him. He has no name.
The horse was shod, and Preacher figured it had belonged to one of Bedell's group who had ambushed him. Preacher pulled his spare hawking from the boot and tossed it to the Kansas holding the reins of the horse. As soon as he caught up with Bedell's group, He'd have him another rifle quick-like anyway. He tossed a bag of shot and a powder horn to the engine, too.
Fair trade?
Fair.
The Kanza nodded once and dropped the reins. The engines rode away without a backward glance. Preacher petted the big brown. He had him gentled down and taken grass from his hand in a matter of minutes. He was in the saddle and riding west within the hour. A half a dozen Pawnees spied Preacher and rode to block his way. But Preacher wasn't about to be intimidated by the Pawnee. He didn't like them any more than they liked him. Preacher had discovered that whoever trained this horse had done a fine job of it. He looped the reins loose around the saddle horn, filled both hands with those pistols of his, and charged. Preacher rode right in amongst them and blew three of them straight to the arms of whatever or whoever they believed in after death. The other three galloped off like their asses was on fire, and they didn't look back. Preacher watched them until they were nothing but dark dots on the vastness of the land. They'd be back for sure. Preacher had him a little time to inspect the dead before they returned, with more warriors. He was sure of that, too. He began the grisly job of checking out the dead. One of the dead Pawnee had a rifle beside his body that Preacher recognized. Sergeant Scott had carried it.
Damn.
Preacher picked up the Plains rifle and checked it, then tore shot pouch, powder horn, and caps bag from the dead engine. The percussion caps told Preacher that the Pawnee had more than likely taken the rifles from the wagon train, for every rifle there had been the latest model. He tried at first not to look at the hair on the Pawnee's war axe, but he did, and it was Scott's. But something else about the scalp troubled Preacher. He jerked the scalp loose and felt it.
Dry. Even the underside's damn near dry. It just came along after the bodies had stiffened and done their knife work.
Preacher left the bodies where they lay. The next day, Preacher found the spot where the battle had taken place. Bedell had split his people. One group had swung wide and gotten in front of the wagons, and another had hit him from the rear while the wagons were strung out and on the move. It had been one hell of a running battle, and the last wagon had been halted some 5 miles from the ambush site. Preacher found lots of signs of dried blood, but he could not find one body.
And where the hell did the Pawnee come up on Scott?
He'd probably never know. Some animals could have dragged off the body or bodies by now. Preacher backtracked. There was no point in getting into a hurry now. The deed was done, and he couldn't undo it. Every few hundred yards, he'd stop and sniff the air. Preacher knew Bedell and his thugs wouldn't have taken the bodies far. They had to be buried somewhere close by. Finally, he smelled it. The unmistakable odor of death. Four of the drivers hired back in Missouri were buried in a shallow grave. Animals had uncovered them and had eaten on the bodies. Preacher covered them again, piling rocks over the dirt. Then he went looking for more bodies. He found the body of a woman he'd known only as Ross, buried in a hastily dug grave with a woman he'd heard called Mary Lou. Their heads had been bashed in. Preacher found the other drivers. They'd been shot, and part of a dried creek bank caved in on them. One hand curled into a fist was protruding from the earth. Preacher left them in peace where they lay. He walked a short distance and found two of Lieutenant Worthington's soldiers next. Sergeant Scott was lying dead with them. All had been scalped. Casting about, Preacher could see plain the wagon. Looked like Bedell and his men were gonna follow the ill-defined trail all the way.
Black-hearted heathens. Filth and trash.
Preacher found Charlie Burke dead and uncovered in the brush. Old Charlie must have put up one hell of a fight, for he'd been shot half a dozen times and had still managed to get away to die alone. Preacher found a shovel and he buried his friend, his weapons with him. 15 minutes later, he found Ned. The mountain man had been shot about as many times as Charlie, but had still gotten away from the terrible fight. He had propped himself up against a tree and was smoking his pipe for the last time when he died. His pipe was still in his cold hand. Preacher buried him.
God damn them.
Preacher next found the bodies of the young children. He carefully buried them, boys with boys and girls with girls. He couldn't find enough of their clothing to cover them proper, and that seemed like the worst sin to Preacher. Then he found the rest of Rupert's soldiers. They had sought cover in a short ravine and died like soldiers, fighting to the last man. Then Bedell's men had gone through their pockets, removing all papers and money. Preacher laid them out in the shallow ravine and caved earth and rocks over them. When he could find no more bodies, Preacher began casting about for bloodstains that might have been left by any wounded. He found plenty of it. It looked like Steele's pony, Ring, Snake, and Blackjack had taken lead but had managed to get away. It was getting too dark to track, so Preacher made camp. His thoughts were as dark as the night as he rolled up into his blankets. Old Satan himself would have tiptoed light around what Preacher was thinking. At first light, Preacher tracked the wounded with the tenacity of a bloodhound. He soon found what he'd hoped to find. A small group of women had gotten away, and they had done so on horseback. Eudora had her a foot size that was equal to her height, and she had led the group of females out and away from the attack. Maybe Bedell and his men had decided not to pursue the women, thinking they'd probably die out there anyway. It took Preacher most of the day to find them. He spotted them through his spyglass, and he noted with satisfaction that they had picked good cover in which to light and rest. He didn't want to spook them, and as jumpy as he knowed they was, he might get shot right off the mark if he showed himself plain.
Ladies, it's me, Preacher. Don't shoot me, gals.
My stars and garters, Captain, come on in.
Preacher rode into their tiny camp and slid from the saddle. There were seven women: Eudora, Faith, Cornelia, April, Lizette, Madeline, and Claire. They all hugged him. Then Preacher took the cup of coffee Eudora handed him and sat down to hear their story.
It appears that Bedell had women loyal to him on the train. About 20 or so of them. Whores from out of New Orleans and Natchez. They turned out to be meaner and crueler than the men with Bedell. They tortured poor Anna to death, while some of the men were busy raping and others were gathering up the stock and wagons.
I seen the young girls and boys. I buried everybody I found. I reckon they took the girls that was of age. I didn't see none of them. You know what happens to Steele's pony, Ring, Snake, and Blackjack?
Steele's pony and Blackjack were both wounded. I know that much. I witnessed that. I don't know what happened to the old man.
Faith, what happened to Rupert?
None of us saw him.
You don't look well, Preacher. Are you all right?
I'll be okay, Claire. I was shot a couple of times, but it ain't serious. They're healing up proper. I just ain't got my strength back yet. It'll come soon.
That's a terrible gash on your head, but it seems to be healing.
I've been treated with poultices. Same with the bullet hole in my side and back. It's still some sore, but the bleeding's long stopped and it's closing up. I just need 2 or 3 days to take it easy.
We can take the time.
But the ladies...
What's happened to them has happened, Madeline. They are not going to die from being raped.
I'd rather die.
Then you're a damn fool. I don't want to hear any more such talk. What are we going to do, Captain?
We're gonna attack.
Preacher moved everyone back close to the trail. And then he ate, slept, ate again, and slept again. 3 days. He knew there was no point in his jumping right out after Bedell when just shoveling a few spades of dirt over the dead had damn near tuckered him out total. While he rested and got his strength back, he had the ladies over at the ambush site going over the weapons he took from the dead. Food was a problem, but it wouldn't be for long. Just long enough to catch up with the wagons. Bedell and his bunch liked to terrorize people. Preacher would soon see how he liked it when the tables got turned around. In the chilly gray light of morning, Preacher looked at the ladies. They were all dressed in men's clothing. They had chopped their hair off even shorter than before. Each carried a rifle in one hand and another in a saddle boot. They had pistols hung everywhere, and each woman carried two buckled around her waist.
Time to do it, ladies.
Preacher's side and back still bothered him a little, but the head wound was very nearly healed. He'd been shot before, and he knew how fast he would heal. By the time they caught up with the wagons, he'd be 100%.
Let's ride.
About 6 or 7 miles from the ambush site, Preacher called a rest period along a little creek shaded by cottonwoods. He'd seen something glittering brightly, and he wanted to check it out. While the ladies rested, he found the source of the twinkling. Rupert Worthington's cavalry saber had his name engraved right on the blade. He showed it to the women.
I've seen some tracks leading toward that ridge yonder. I'm going on foot. Y'all stay here.
He found the young lieutenant. He was lying on his belly in a clump of brush just off the crest of the small ridge. He was sound asleep. Preacher took the officer's rifle and slipped his pistols from their holsters. Then he squatted down beside the sleeping young man. He tickled his nose with a long stem of grass. Rupert brushed at his nose. Preacher tickled the man's ear. Rupert waved at it and opened one eye. Then he opened the other one wide.
My God!
No, it ain't. It's just me. You hurt bad, boy? You got blood all over your shirt and a fair respectable goose egg on your head there.
I thought I was. And you have all my weapons. I'm sure glad you're not one of those brigands.
Are you hurt?
No, not badly. I thought I was mortally wounded at first. The ball struck a watch I'd been carrying in my shirt pocket. The shot knocked me off my horse, and I struck the back of my head on a rock and blacked out. When I awoke, I found that fragments of the watch had cut me, and that's where most of the blood come from.
Preacher looked at the back of the young man's head. Had him a pretty good bump there, too.
What happened to the front of your noggin?
I tried to catch up with a frightened horse and got kicked in the head. I guess it knocked my sense away because all I remember is that I was waving my saber and ranting like a wild man. Then my next conscious thought was that I was burning up with fever. I don't remember coming here, but I lost my saber.
I found it. I left it with the ladies down by the creek.
The ladies? They're alive?
Well, 7 of them with me. The others was took prisoner by Bedell and his trash. Few was killed outright. So was the kids. And all your command.
Oh, God.
Rupert put his face in his hands. Whilst the lieutenant was clearing his emotions, Preacher looked out over the land. No smoke, no sign of engines. Not that that meant a whole hell of a lot. He stepped to the crest and called down to the ladies.
Y'all build a fire and boil some water and save some to clean up Rupert's wounds. He ain't hurt terrible bad. We'll be down directly.
Preacher returned and knelt down beside the young army man.
It's all right to cry, Rupert. Damn people who say a man ain't supposed to weep. Them rotten sons of bitches killed my good horse Hammer, and I squalled something fierce it did. So you just go right on and get it clear out your system. And when you feel up to it, we'll head on down to the creek and get you tended to.
While Preacher waited with the lieutenant, he decided to leave the still ill-defined wagon trail and stay to the south of the stolen wagons and kidnapped ladies, who would be following close to the Platte. Preacher had a plan, sorta, but it was a chancy one. He had his bow and quiver of arrows, and he planned on doing some silent killing. He planned to retake the wagons, one at a time.
You can't be serious, Preacher.
I'm serious as death, Rupert. It's the only way. Once we get 20 or so women freed from them damn trash, we'll have us a force large enough to mount some sort of attack.
But this Bedell person might challenge that by saying if we attack, he'll start killing the women he still holds.
Could be. But you got a plan that's better than mine? That's what I thought.
Rupert looked back at the women, all dressed in men's breeches and riding astride in single file. In just a few short weeks, they had undergone a drastic change. They looked capable. Their shirts were loose-fitting and their hats floppy. Even at a reasonably close distance, unless one made a very careful inspection, they would pass for men.
My men, Preacher. How did they die?
I know what you mean. They died like soldiers, boy. They dug in and fought to the finish. And when you make your report, you can say that.
You really believe that we'll come out of this alive, don't you?
Hell yes, I do. This time tomorrow, I'll start cutting down the odds some.
Suppose that the last wagon is driven by one of the women who was in this with Bedell.
What about it?
Would you kill her?
As fast as I would a man. Trash is trash.
I don't know that I could kill a woman.
Them hoary women who toss in their lot with Bedell and his scum tortured Anna to death, Rupert. They helped the trashy bastards do unnatural things to the boys before they killed them. I seen what was left of them young boys, and I ain't going into no details about it. You can use your goddamn imagination. Them with the Bedell is twisted, son. In the head. And don't give me no Eastern crap about due process and feeling sorry for scum, because I don't want to hear it. And get this straight, Rupert. I ain't taking no prisoners. And I ain't going to let a damn one of Bedell's people reach the coast, male or female. Them sorry white trash killed my friends and killed my good horse Hammer. This is personal now. And it ought to be for you, too. They're cold-blooded murderers, all of them. They killed your command. Now you better make up your mind whether you're with me all the way. Because in this situation, halfway ain't gonna do it.
Amen to that. You'll just let me get that damn ruby in my gun sights. I'll gut shoot her so fast it'll billow your mainsail.
My word.
I want that damn Cindy Lou. I never did trust her.
I got my mind set on Aileen. I saw what she did. I see it every night in my dreams. And I'll not rest easy until she's rotting in the grave. Not that she even deserves a grave.
Hate is not a good thing. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord.
Stick your platitudes up your bottom.
There is no need to be coarse, Miss Faith.
So how do you think you'd like it if one of Bedell's men bent you over a wagon tongue and sailed up your stern?
Ah, heavens!
Oh, Rupert, shut up and get your mind set for killing. You gotta be just as cold-blooded and hard as them we fight. If we're not, then we're gonna lose. And that's all there is to it, boy. That's a sum total.
I'll do my best.
Later on, Preacher left the others well hidden about 2 miles south of the Platte while he scouted ahead. He hid and watched as the stolen wagons rolled on by.
Just like I figured, staying right on the trail.
Soon, Preacher's party took off, headed west for some 10 miles, then cut straight north. They reached the Platte River, which would later be dubbed as too thick to drink and too thin to plow by the westward-bound flow of settlers, and Preacher selected his ambush site. He fixed a small fire out of dry, virtually smokeless wood. Venison steaks were soon cooking. Rupert watched Preacher carefully going over his arrows.
What in the world are you doing?
I gotta make the first shot count, boy. I can't let that driver scream.
Where do you plan on shooting the person?
Right through the throat. All they can do then is moan soft and gurgle wet some.
Rupert swallowed hard at the thought.
Or I might take a chance and get on the wagon through the rear and cut his throat, or her throat, whatever. I'll just have to see what it looks like. Them steaks is done. Let's eat.
The ambush site was in the eastern bend of a long curve. It was a rocky section of the trail, and the going was torturously slow. Preacher figured the stock was driven on ahead. The man who was driving the last wagon was a hard-faced, sour-looking man, whose face bore several deep scratches. He'd had his way with some woman, but she had damn sure marked him up good before he got her britches off. Preacher left Rupert to guard the women, telling him that he was needed there, and telling him that he was really dependent on them, and that he was taking Eudora in case some of the women in the wagon wasn't in proper dress and needed a woman's touch. Rupert bought it. He's a good lad. Preacher just needed someone with him who would not hesitate to cut a throat if need be. And he knew that Eudora would not hesitate one second.
You can be diplomatic when you try, Captain. That was kind of you to soothe Rupert's feelings of being left with the women. Even though I know it was a crock of stinking fish.
Just as soon as I let the air fly, I'm out of here and on the wagon seat, Eudora. When I signal, you come hopping. I figure we got 3 to 4 minutes at the most to get it done. We take supplies and any prisoners that might be riding in the wagon bed. They gotta think it's Injuns. You ready?
As I'll ever be.
When the next to last wagon had rounded the bend and was out of sight, the creature stood up and let his arrow fly. It was true to its mark. The driver threw up his hands and toppled backward into the covered bed of the wagon. No sound came from the bed, so Preacher figured there were no prisoners there. He leaped from the brush and hopped onto the seat, grabbing up the reins and stopping the wagon. Eudora quickly gathered up sugar, flour, beans, and bacon, while Preacher picked up blankets and coffee and as many other items as he felt he could carry. The outlaw's horse was tied to the rear. Preacher took the end, after quickly lashing the supplies to the saddle and behind it. Then he and Eudora were gone, leading the new animal back to their hidden horses. Long after the wagons were gone, Preacher and Rupert rode back to the ambush site. The wagon had been abandoned, but the mules had been taken. It looked like Bedell didn't have any spare drivers. Preacher grinned at that. That bastard was going to have even less drivers come the dawning.
Take the canvas, Rupert, and the rope. I'll see what they left in the bed.
What about the dead driver? They left him.
That ought to tell you what kind of people we're dealing with. They didn't even take the time to bury him. Sorry, bunch of bastards. Leave him.
But...
Shut up, Rupert. Do what I tell you to do. I warned you about arguing with me.
Rupert closed his mouth and turned his head as Preacher carefully removed his arrow from the man's neck. Bedell's people had not even bothered to inspect what contents remained in the bed of the wagon. Much of it was useful to Preacher and his small group. Preacher took the dead man's pistols to give to the ladies, and fine pistols they was, too. He started to take the dead man's hat, because it was a good one, until he saw lice crawling on it. He decided to forego the hat.
I still think we should bury the poor wretch.
Yeah, well, stop thinking, Rupert. I'll tell you when to think. Let's get going.
Bedell didn't believe for 1 second that Injuns had been responsible for the ambush of the wagon. The handsome, well-dressed man sat drinking coffee and staring morosely into the flames of the fire.
The man who ambushed the wagon, and it was one goddamn man, was Preacher. The men said they'd seen Preacher take at least 2 balls, one of them to the head. Well, the wounds must have been pretty damn slight. I've got more men waiting to join up with the group when the wagon's cut north a few days from now. They'll more than make up for the men Preacher's killed. But damn the luck. Faith Crump got away, and she was our trump card. Old man Crump would have paid a fortune to get his daughter back. With that money, plus the money the gold brings, and the gold is here, all right. I know that. I can live like a king for the rest of my life. Goddamn Preacher to hell. When the wagons link up with the men from California, I'll assign all the new men to kill Preacher and grab Faith Crump. It's the only way.
In the protective circle around the outlaw's camp, Preacher cut a guard's throat from one side to the other. He lashed him to a wagon wheel so as he looked like he was standing up. He made his way silently to the horses and led several away into the darkness. Then he returned to the wagons. He passed up several wagons, for the outlaws were busying themselves with the ladies in them, until he came to a wagon that was silent. He peeked in. Gail Hawkins, Brigitte Wilson, and Bertha Macklin were all trussed up like hogs, with gags in their mouths. Preacher slipped into the darkened wagon.
Shh, don't make a sound, ladies. Not one sound or we're all dead.
The women, wide-eyed in shock, surprise, and relief, nodded their heads in understanding. Even in the darkened bed of the wagon, Preacher could see that the women had been savagely beaten, but at least they'd been allowed to pull their breeches, shirts, and boots back on. He slashed the ropes quickly.
One at a time, gals. It gets real chancy from here on in. You follow me and don't trip on nothing.
They almost made it without incident. They had just reached the horses when a guard found the dead man.
Holy shit! Leroy's dead! Look sharp! We got company!
Ride, ladies! Ride like the devil and his demons is after you!
The Preacher and the women vanished into the dark, with Bedell and his men staying put at their camp. The Preacher led them back to the waiting ladies and Rupert, but through part of the river and over some rocky terrain to be sure they wouldn't be tracked.
Preacher! Eudora,
whoa, did it! Whoa! Celebrate later, goddammit!
Right now, we gotta pack up and get gone. Bedell will have men out come the morning looking for us. We'll swing wide around the wagons and follow the river for a time.
For how long a time?
Till I say we stop. Now move it! They moved it. Preacher pushed the tired group hard for several hours. Then he let them sleep for a few hours and rolled them out and pushed them hard for several more hours. Just at dawn, he finally allowed them to stop and make camp.
All right, ladies. Fix something to eat and get some rest. I'll stand first watch and then wake you up, Rupert. It's not only Bedell and his people we gotta look out for, it's the Injuns as well. We've been real lucky so far, but the further west we travel, the more likely that is to change at any moment.
Preacher took the first watch. He was tired himself, and he nearly jumped out of his skin when Eudora rested her hand on his shoulder later.
Whoa!
Don't shoot. It's just me. Get some rest, Captain. I'll stand the next watch.
Preacher smiled at her and nodded. So complete was his trust in the New Englander that he went right off to sleep. Preacher opened his eyes and without moving looked around as much as he could while lying on his side. He could tell by the position of the sun that it was the middle of the afternoon. Rupert was on guard and keeping a low profile of it. Madeline was cooking. A small fire had been built under branches to break up the smoke. They had used wood that was nearly smokeless. It hadn't taken these women long to learn. Eudora was sitting with her back to a large rock, a rifle across her knees. Preacher had thought that Eudora would be one hell of a fine wife, as long as her man stayed true to her. But God help him if he ever strayed. Eudora cut her eyes to Preacher.
All quiet as far as we can see, Captain.
Preacher nodded and accepted a cup of coffee from Madeline. The women he'd taken from the train the night before had washed up and changed into cleaner breeches and shirts. Preacher ate some bacon and beans that was flavored with molasses and some pan bread. The hot food hit the spot. He polished off his meal with another cup of coffee.
Everybody yet?
All except Bertha, Gale, and Brigitte. I wanted them to rest as long as possible. They had a bad time of it, Captain.
After they wake up and eat, I've got a mind to move us. There's a better place I recall about 5 miles further on. Ain't a bad ride, neither. And it's a hell of an ambush spot.
Soon, Bertha and the others awakened. They stretched the kinks out and got coffee and food.
Y'all eat, then we'll move to a better spot. But attacking the last wagon is out for the time being. They'll be wise to that trick and cautious.
So what will you do? Or rather, what will we do?
We kill some outlaws.
Good.
Brigitte pulled a hunting knife out of a sheath and went to work sharpening it on a rock. Preacher had him a thought about what she had in mind, and it made him shudder. Knowing that Bedell and his people would be doubly cautious after Preacher's raid, he let them alone for this night. It was probably for the best, because the women needed the rest anyway, and Preacher admitted to himself that so did he. He was still not 100%, but he knew he would be in a few more days. Just before the fire was doused for the night, Preacher ruminated a while and then stared hard at Faith, a thoughtful expression on his face.
Faith?
Yes?
Your paw is worth considerable, ain't he?
Oh, yes, he's quite wealthy.
Like in thousands of dollars?
Like in hundreds of thousands of dollars, Preacher.
How about your ma?
She came into quite a vulgar sum of money when her parents died a few years ago.
Yeah, I see. Now, part of it's coming together now. Eudora, I heard some of the other women talking about you back on the trail. Now, I figure Hempstead ain't your real name, but it'll do as far as I'm concerned. You got in a mite of trouble back east, and your daddy bailed you out in the nick of time and sent you west. You reckon there's any way that Bedell might know who you really are?
If he reads the newspapers, yes. And I see what you're driving at. I think you're right. My father is a prosperous man, but not wealthy like Faith's parents. But both would pay a lot of money to get us back.
But only Bedell and Jack Hayes would be in on it. Maybe one or two more. The rest of the scum would be kept in the dark. Bedell promised our women to the trash to do with as they pleased. He wanted the supplies and the mules to use in his quest for gold and Faith and Eudora for ransom. The men would be more likely to stay with them for the long haul if they had women to use along the way. But they'll plan this out long and hard, and it's damn near worked. So in his mind, we all got to die. Bertha, ladies,
Did any of you see what happened to Steele's pony, Ring, Snake, and Blackjack?
No. It was all so confusing and it happened so fast.
I gotta think they made it out. I have to keep thinking that.
Preacher rolled up in his blankets and lay for a time before drifting off to sleep. There probably would be no more chances to grab any women from the train. If they had any sense, the outlaws would be placing the women in the center of the circle now. Of course, Preacher thought, if they had any sense, they wouldn't be outlaws. He had to keep cutting down the odds. He had to keep nibbling away at Bedell's men. And Preacher knew that he was the only one to do that. Rupert had courage, and he'd stand and fight. But the young officer was not a frontiersman. The ladies would also fight, but they wouldn't be much good at sneaking in and out. Preacher tried to figure out how many women were captive. About 100, he figured. That was too damn many for Bedell's men to guard effectively. Then he opened his eyes wide as another thought came to him. There'd be women escaping. All odds pointed to that. And if Preacher and his group stayed in front of the wagons, the women would be escaping from one terrible fate right smack into another one. Alone and unarmed in hostile environment.
Damn! God damn! God damn it!
What are you damning now?
Oh, nothing. Go to sleep.
Maybe it wouldn't be such a bad thing after all, Preacher thought. Attacks from the rear would mean Bedell would have to switch more men from the front and the flanks. And after a couple of hit-and-run attacks on the rear, Preacher could change tactics and strike from the front. The more he thought about that, the better he liked it. And he'd hit them just as they were ending the day on the trail, and the men would be tired, not terribly alert. Maybe hit them just as they were all waking up, too, grumbling and sleepy. The next morning on the trail, the group unanimously agreed to Preacher's plan.
Of course some of the ladies will be getting away. I didn't even think of that.
I didn't either till last night. Everyone, keep a sharp eye out.
That afternoon, as the group swung in behind the wagons, staying back about 5 miles, they came upon a body sprawled beside the trail. The woman was naked, and she had been savagely horsewhipped.
Leah Maxwell. She always fought her attackers until they beat her to the ground.
Eudora covered the lady with a ragged blanket. Preacher rolled her up in the blanket and tied it securely with rope.
They've done this to set an example, to keep the other ladies in line. Fetch a shovel, Rupert.
Preacher cut his eyes to the ladies. They were angry, and man, it showed. This single act of viciousness had knotted the group together even more firmly. If there had been any reluctance on anyone's part, it was gone now.
You got anything else to say about codes of conduct, fair trials, and lawyers and such, boy?
Not a thing.
Now you think you can shoot one of them bastards or their low-life bitches down in cold blood now, do you?
Without hesitation.
Good. You might just survive out here, then.
The group tagged along behind the wagons for 2 more days after the burying of Lee. Preacher made no moves against the outlaws, waiting for him to get careless. He'd already spotted the 2 figures stumbling along far in the distance, and he knew he'd been right in his decision to swing in behind the wagons. 2 women had managed to escape their cruel captors. If this kept up, Preacher would have to steal some more horses.
You see him, Preacher?
I've been seeing him, Rupert, but you're getting better at taking in what's around you. You see the ladies, Eudora?
Now I do.
They were Maud and Agnes, British sisters from out of Baltimore City. And they was wore to a frazzle. The ladies pulled out some jerky and did their best to get some food and water into the poor sisters.
They'll come after us. They told us all the other evening that if anyone escaped, they'd track us down and kill us. Slowly. They can't be more than an hour or so behind.
Good. We'll not only cut the odds down some, but we'll have us some spare mounts too. Up there's the perfect spot. Let's get into position.
Preacher positioned the ladies and warned them not to move anything except their eyes. Agnes and Maud were left to rest, for the 2 women were running on only a slim reserve of strength. Preacher found the highest spot around and started scanning the terrain. The outlaws showed up quicker than he'd anticipated. 6 of them, riding those fine mounts, keeping their eyes on the trail left by the escaping women. Preacher worked his way back to the group and smiled.
They're riding right into it. Get in close enough to see their eyes. Fire on my command. Get set.
Preacher and Rupert gathered up the spooked horses and the dead trash while Eudora and the others checked the downed outlaws. One wasn't quite dead. Brigitte cut his throat. The ambush netted the group 6 fine horses, more supplies, blankets, and ground sheets. They had powder, shot, lead, and molds. They also now had more damn weapons than they could possibly even use. Preacher checked them all carefully and used part of the canvas taken from the abandoned wagon to wrap them and lash the guns on a pack horse.
When we finally make our stand, we'll load them all up and have more firepower than Bedell, I hope. But I can't help but believe he's got more men waiting up ahead somewheres.
He does. I overheard men talking about that more than once, but the second group is days ahead of the wagon.
Where, Maud?
I don't know the precise spot. Just that they would be waiting at the spot where the wagons cut north.
That's a long way from here. I know exactly where it is. We got time to cut the odds plenty more before then.
I can hardly wait.
Brigitte wiped her knife clean on her britches. When his men had not returned by dusk, Victor Bedell felt the first seed of doubt enter his mind.
It's 11 men we've lost, the preacher, and we're still days away from the rendezvous point. We're down to 40 men and the 20 whores. We'll have to abandon some of the wagons. I don't have the men and the women to drive them all and still keep the outriders looking for hostiles. We'll have to abandon some of the mules, too. And if we do that, we'll have to abandon some of the supplies. We can't afford to overload the wagons. This trail turns harder later on.
Preacher sat his saddle and stared at the dozen wagons sitting motionless on the trail. The mules were still hitched up to him, and that pissed Preacher off something fierce. If Bedell had abandoned the wagons, and it sure looked like that's what he'd done, the least a sorry bastard could have done was unhitch the poor critters and let them fend off the land. It was late in the afternoon and it turned hot. The wind was kicking up a lot of dust.
Stay put until I scout this out. Them damn wagons might be filled with riflemen. But the way them mules are fidgeting and suffering down there, I doubt it. They smell that river ahead, they want to drink bad.
Preacher rode over, slipped down to the unexposed side of his horse, and circled the wagons a couple of times, studying the strange scene by looking under his horse's neck. The mule sure appeared glad to see another living creature, even if it was nothing more than a damn horse. Preacher slid off his horse and rolled under the rear wagon, his pistols at the ready. But he sensed quickly that the wagons were void of human life. He quickly inspected them all.
It's safe. Come on in.
He was unhooking the mules when they rode up.
Take these poor critters to water. Haul back on them now. They're right thirsty.
Preacher, Eudora, and Faith inspected the wagons and found fodder for the mules and plenty of food and spare clothing for them all.
I don't understand this.
We cut them down so thin, Bedell doesn't have the men to drive the wagons. Right, Captain?
Yeah, that's it. But he must be more of a black-hearted son than I thought to leave those poor mules to suffer in harness.
I drove mules as a boy. I can fix these harnesses to increase the team size. We can hook the tongues of the spare wagons to the underpinnings of the front wagon and only have to use 6 drivers instead of 12. That way we'll still have ample guards out. But first I gotta determine which mules are the leaders.
Well, you just go right ahead there, Rupert. You get them rigged up and we'll be back in business, by God.
They're right behind us.
Who is Jack?
Preacher and a bunch of men. I seen them with my own eyes. They've hitched up the wagons we left behind and are coming on. The wagons are double-teamed.
You saw Preacher, probably, but the others are women dressed as men. Preacher double-teamed those goddamn mules because he didn't have enough people to drive single wagons, just like us.
We'll not ambush Preacher again. I say we attack.
Yeah, just ride right over him. We can do it.
Bedell looked at Taylor. The man was not known for his intelligence. For that matter, neither was Jack Hayes.
No. Our losses would be too great. Even if we managed to succeed, our numbers would be cut in half. And then where would we be, huh? I'll tell you where we'd be. In the middle of hostile country with not enough men to fight off an Indian attack. No, we'll hold until the rendezvous point, then deal with Preacher.
Supper was over and the fire put out before darkness fell. This close to Bedell, there would be no more night fires.
Why don't they attack? I would.
I think, Miss Faith, that Bedell has calculated the odds of conducting a successful attack and found them not to his liking.
Well, I'll be goddamn, you're learning, Rupert. I took a chance by pulling us this close to that trash, but it looks like it worked. Bedell's worried, and I intend to keep him that way for a few days.
What do we do now?
Best thing we can, Miss Brigitte. Get some shut-eye.
At the end of the second day, after learning that Preacher and the others were tagging along behind him, a thoroughly disgusted Bedell glared at the scout for that day, the dumb as a rock tater.
Well?
He's still back yonder, just applauding along.
Did you let yourself be seen as I told you?
Yes, sir, Mr. Bedell. I showed myself up no more than 500 yards from the wagons.
What did Preacher do?
He waved at me.
He did what?
Waved at me.
That goddamn son of a bitch. Little better than a savage. Breeding always tells. In the morning, we'll just push on and stay alert. If Preacher waits much longer, we'll have him where we want him.
Just after dusk, Preacher went belly down in the grass and crept within 100 yards from Bedell's circle of wagons. He had not come to attack, but to observe. Just as he had guessed, Bedell had put the women in the center of the camp. No way in hell he could help them while they were located there. Then Preacher sensed more than heard movement behind him, and to his right, he moved only his eyes. Injuns. Kiowa or Cheyenne, probably. And they were moving in closer. He couldn't believe how bad his medicine was this trip. Preacher waited motionless. The night had turned cloudy, the stars and moon not visible, and it smelled like rain.
Oh, shit, they're on my left, too. I hope to hell they ain't coming up behind me. If one of them crawls on top of me, it's gonna be one hell of a surprise for both of us.
Preacher had left his horse about a mile back in a deep ravine. He remembered a slight depression behind him, about 50 yards back.
Might as well be 50 damn miles of a scalp hunting bucks all around me.
Preacher couldn't stay where he was. So he started slowly backing up.
God, if you out there listening, I sure could use some rain right about now.
Suddenly, the clouds shifted and the faint moonlight began to illuminate the area.
All right then, Lord, forget I mentioned it.
Preacher kept backing up. Much to his surprise, he reached the protected depression in the earth. Slid down. Landed right on top of the biggest and meanest looking Kiowa brave he had ever seen. They both jumped back, and for about 2 seconds, Preacher and the brave just looked at each other in shock and surprise.
Nothing personal, friend.
Preacher hauled off and hit that engine just as hard as he could with his fist, right on the side of the jaw. It didn't even faze the brave. That Kiowa just crouched there on his knees in that big hole in the earth and grinned an evil curving of the lips at Preacher. Pure murder in his eyes.
Oh, shit.
Engine! Preacher reached for his knife just as the Kiowa went for his war axe. Preacher cut him wide open from one side of his belly to the other. Then he came around again and damn near took the brave's head off. Preacher was out of that hole in the ground and moving like he had bees in his roar. While behind him, Bedell's men were filling the air with lead balls as fast as they could, probably not hitting a damn thing. Kiowa being what they are. Preacher delayed the morning pullout until he had made a wide circle of about 2 miles all around his camp. There was no smoke from the west, so he reckoned the Kiowa attack had failed. He led the wagons on, making good time, but being very cautious. The Kiowa had taken their dead with him, of course, but Bedell hadn't even bothered to take the time to bury his dead men. His dead men not being really accurate. The only dead were 4 women from the original group. They halted the wagons and got down to investigate.
That woman with the arrow in her chest, that's Judy Barnes. I never did learn the names of those two, but that's Rosanna there. I don't know her last name, sorry.
Fetch some shovels. This group sure is getting thinner and thinner.
Bedell sent 3 men out to scout their back trail, but because Preacher had decided on a late start and then stopped to bury the women, the scouts didn't ride far enough to spot Preacher in the wagons. Instead, they mistook a cloud of dust for smoke and raced back to Bedell all kinds of excited.
You're sure it was smoke?
Hell yes! Positive! Them savages must have hit him after we run him off. Preacher and them women is buzzard bait now.
Excellent. Very good, boys.
You hear that, you sorry, pathetic pilgrim bitches? Preacher's dead and so are your friends. There's no point in trying to escape. So my advice to you is to accept your fate. You cannot change it.
The shoulders of the women sagged in defeat. That evening, Bedell selected a very young and very pretty woman to satisfy his perverse desires.
Oh, God.
Lieutenant Rupert Worthington lost his breakfast, and only Eudora Hempstead and Faith Crump had the iron in them to stand with Preacher and look upon the body of the young woman. The other ladies fled the scene and returned to the wagons. Preacher covered her poor, battered body with a blanket.
Bedell's work. Doing things like this pleases him. He is a twisted man. There was all kinds of talk around St. Louis about him. Somebody get a shovel.
It would take a madman to do something this hideous.
No, just a man who can't control himself. Any man that can function and speak proper, dress themselves, work, and step out of the way of carriages and so forth, they ain't crazy. And I don't give a damn what these so-called smart people say. Men like Bedell and anyone who rides with him and stands by him watches while something like this, what was done to this poor child, don't do nothing about it, well, they deserve a bullet or a rope. They sure as hell don't deserve no sympathy.
This journey has changed me considerably. I used to deplore the conditions of prisons and jails and the treatment of criminals. I will never again editorialize on that subject.
Well, then you'd be wrong, Faith. There's innocent people in prison. Maybe they's behind bars because they couldn't pay their debts for one good reason or another. And look, just because a man falls on hard times don't mean that he should be locked up like a murderer or a horse thief or the like. There's men in prison for defending hearth and home, and that's wrong. Man has a right to protect kith and kin. I'll go to my grave believing that.
I certainly agree with you, Preacher. I wouldn't have a few weeks ago. But I damn sure do now. Like Miss Crump, this journey has changed me immeasurably. I will never be the same.
None of us will. None of us.
You can count me in there too, I reckon. But I'm afraid ain't none of you seen nothing yet. Let's get this poor child buried.
Meanwhile, Bedell was using every moment of daylight to push on westward. What Bedell didn't know was that four very tough, angry, and determined mountain men were paralleling him on the north side of the flat. Snake, Ring, Steel's Pony, and Blackjack. The four had not been back to the site of the attack, and they'd all presumed Preacher had been killed along with Charlie and Ned. For they had all seen the others take a lot of lead. The mountain men would have their revenge against Bedell and all those with him. They would wait until the wagons hit the mountains. All four men had been wounded, but none seriously. By the time they had found each other, the fight was over, and there was nothing they could do except save themselves and see to their wounds.
I'm gonna miss Preacher and Charlie and Ned.
Me too, Blackjack. He's good friends for certain.
Bedell needs to pay for this.
He will. We'll make sure of that.
I'm glad we're going back to the high country. I got me a feeling it's gonna be my last ride.
Steel's Pony glanced at Snake. He didn't make light of such predictions. He had seen too many of his own kind predict nearly to the minute when they were gonna leave this world to walk over to the other side. Blackjack said nothing about it either. The mountain man had lived with Injuns and knew when it was a man's time to go. A lot of men could predict it. Or will it happen?
We got company. Ponca tribe. They're not looking for trouble. They got their families and belongings with them.
The men rode over to the small band of migrating Injuns and greeted them as friends. An old man peered closely at Snake.
I know you. You shared my teepee many, many winters ago. My wife and family were sick, and you hunted meat for us. I have never forgotten you. I have news that might interest you. My old friend Preacher has taken up the blood hunt for those who attacked him. I do not know what happened, But it must have been terrible for Preacher to swear such vengeance.
He's alive? When did you hear this?
2 days ago. Preacher is leading a small band of women through to the Shining Waters across the mountains. I always wanted to see the Shining Waters.
Did you learn where Preacher is?
South of the river, on the trail, east of a huge line of wagons that are driven by very unfriendly men. Stay away from them. We need to continue our journey now. Peace to you.
Well?
Well, what's your lard butt? You waiting for an invitation?
Steel's pony turned his horse south and raced off with Ring right behind him. Blackjack and Snake galloped after, wide grins on their faces.
Riders coming. 4 men coming from the north.
You're getting good, boy. You seen them before I did.
Preacher squinted his eyes and immediately grinned. That grizzly bear on horseback couldn't be nobody except Blackjack.
Hello, Preacher. We done sang death songs for you, flung praises to the Lord about you, and made up hilacious lies to tell about you. Now here you show up alive. Ain't you got no consideration for your friends at all?
Well, now, I purely am sorry you found me alive, Blackjack. I do apologize for not dying. But on the other hand, I already done buried you four in my mind. Now I got to adjust myself to look upon your ugly faces again. At least you and Ring and Steel's pony, that is. I mean, Snake's looked dead for years. Gonna be kind of hard to tell when he do pass.
If and I don't move nor eat for several hours, you come over and take a long sniff. If and I'm ripe, then you can plant me, you heathen.
Yeah, if that's the case, we should have buried you years ago.
Eventually, the mountain men ended up around the fire, each with a plate of food as Preacher told his friends what had transpired.
That's about it, I reckon. On top of all that murdering and raping, that no-count trash killed Hammer. And I aim to avenge my good horse.
They got to be killed, then. It offends me to have to breathe the same air as men who done things like that.
So they're linking up with another party of outlaws up the trail, eh, Preacher?
Yep.
How many?
Don't know. 25 or so, I'd guess. And I don't know whether Bedell's heading for California or the Northwest. Mayhap he had plans to split up. But now... well, I'd take a guess that he's going to stay together and head for the gold he claims he found.
Then we got to hit him before he links up with the others. We let him get too strong and we ain't going to be able to do nothing.
Yeah, that's right. But I don't see no way of getting ahead of Bedell. We can't leave the wagons. He'd be looted and burned before we got 10 miles.
Then he must be slowed down to stop for a day or so, allowing us time to catch up.
Hey, good thought, boy. You got a plan?
Unfortunately, no.
Just below where the river split, there is a place where 4 men could stall the wagons for as long as need be. You have dozens of weapons here, Preacher. You give us extra rifles and caps, shot and powder, and we'll ride on ahead and buy you the time to close the gap.
Sounds good to me.
When do we leave?
You done eating?
Near enough that it makes no never mind.
Then let's go.